Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History, Number 2. My name is Bernice Herzog, and my respondent's name is Edgar Michaels. This is March the 20th, 1992. Edgar, could we begin by you telling me some of your family background, where your elders were from, where your grandparents might have settled, where your family lived as a child?
My mother was born in the end of the 19th century, approximately 1894, on the Russian-Polish border. I asked my mother years later, "Mother, are we really Russian or Polish?" She said it depended who had the stronger army in that section at a particular time. So I guess I'm part Russian, part Polish. My father came from a northern Russia, I guess which was formerly referred to as White Russia. He arrived in the United States as an infant around the turn of the century. Mother arrived a few years later as a teenager. They were married early in 1917. Grandfather had come to the United States, immediately came to Pittsburgh, where he had a sister who was already in residence. So essentially, our family, having arrived from Russia, came to Pittsburgh and have pretty much remained here ever since. I was born in 1923. My father had been in business in the Hill District, and then expanded into the Braddock area. There was a terrible economic depression in the early 20s. Braddock steel strike had precipitated it, and his business was wiped out. His return to business found him in a very insignificant, very small business in a secluded section of the north side known as Troy Hill. This is was at that time almost entirely a German community. It was entirely a German community, and we were, in fact, the only known Jewish family residing there. The store was on the first floor, and we lived in an apartment on the second floor.
Where did you go to school?
I attended Troy Hill Elementary School, and then proceeded to Latimer Junior High School and on to Allegheny Senior High School. All these schools are located on the north side. The Allegheny, one of quite a reputation, located in the lowlands in the central part of the north side, and what was then the cultural center of that community.
What type of schooling, or what type of friends did you have?
My neighborhood friends were of Germanic background, primarily Catholics. The question often asked me, what kind of life did you lead in that totally non-Jewish community? I can honestly say that our family was very well accepted. My father was an extreme extrovert and really numbered the leaders of the community, whether it be the priest or the doctor or the fire captain, whatever, his personal friends. And I was looked at as some kind of a special person because I was of a different religion. And my father insisted that we understand that we were a minority and to be proud of it. Certainly, I remember one day, and there were some people, particularly during the Nazi period, when there would be, unfortunately, a swastika, whatever, on the building. And I can remember very vividly one day him being outside with a bucket and brushing and cleaning up the brick, and he turned to me and he said, "I will sign a written affidavit on this spot that I guarantee them that I am a Jew." And I thought that was a well put, established for me, you stand up for what you are. The north side in those days did have a Jewish community. There was a synagogue on East Street, which we attended regularly. There was a Hebrew school and a Sunday school, and of course it was very important to our parents that we went, met other Jewish children, and participated in the events of the congregation. My mother was a president of the sisterhood. My father was, for all the years that I can remember, an officer in the congregation. Jokingly, as the Jewish community declined, I used to joke and say that my dad and nine other men have a synagogue. Actually, it became eight men, my brother, my father, and me, who virtually kept the synagogue going in the later years. When there were high holiday services, obviously people of mixed marriage or whatever would come, and we would have a rabbi conduct the service. It was almost imperative, the understanding of the community, if you were bright enough to go on to college, you were bright enough to be a Sunday school teacher. That was the rule. There was no ifs, ands, and buts. If you expected to have a home to live in, you understood that you were going to be a Sunday school teacher. And I was a Sunday school teacher. Graduating from high school, I went on to the University of Pittsburgh, and this was just about at the time. And I was at the school somewhat less than a year when World War II.
Tell me a little bit about your siblings.
I had one brother, he's older than me, 5 years older. I have one brother, he's a physician, a pediatrician of great renown in the community with an outstanding reputation. I'm very proud of him.
Was there a good relationship between you and your brother?
Five years is really, while you're growing up, quite a difference. It was almost like I had a third parent, and he was a more straight down the line guy than me, obviously looking forward to a medical career, which meant that he was a lot closer to the books than perhaps I was, although he always did manage to get the grades. No one understood how, but he was pretty quick to report if I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He made sure that I knew it, either through him or through my parents. But I think that it was good counseling. I'm reminded of the kind of community we lived in, where everybody was pretty prim and proper, the kind of place where they took the sidewalks at 10 o'clock in the evening. And on a summer evening, if you walked up the street, as people sat out either on their porch or on their front steps, you were obligated to say good evening to each and every family as you passed them by. That's the kind of community it was. Children could feel free to move around after dark without any fear of crime or whatever. It was that kind of a neighborhood. Everybody knew everybody else. If a stranger came in to the community, everybody was quite aware. It was kind of a fun place to grow up in because you could move around. There was adequate city playgrounds. There was even a city swimming pool, so you could spend a summer day playing ball to your heart's content. And at the end of the afternoon, you'd go take a swim, cool off, come back, time for dinner, perhaps go back to the ball game after dinner or watch a Sandlot game. So it was a pleasant growing up. Thought of going to camp seemed a total unnecessary thing because we had camp every day with better food.
You mentioned World War II interrupting your education. Would you tell me a little bit about your service?
I think World War II was unusual, not only in the kind of terrible condition the European Jews found them in, but also, although perhaps there were Jewish men that served in prior wars representing the United States government, but in World War II there was certainly an outpouring of young Jewish men who felt very much dedicated to the cause of wiping out Nazism, and personally I volunteered and signed up to the United States Air Force as a freshman in Pitt. Went through training and became an aerial navigator and went into the European Theater of Operations. flew in a B-24 bomber, was shot down by the enemy in occupied territory, lived with the French underground for the better part of the summer, and in those days when an aviator was shot down and was in the hands of friendly people, whether it be French or Dutch or Belgian, there was an attempt to move them by underground over the Pyrenees and into neutral country. However, I was shot down in the summer of 44, and by that time we had already invaded both in Normandy and southern France, and particularly George Patton was moving very rapidly with troops and was virtually on our line of latitude. So through British intelligence, we received information the best thing was to stay around in the area until such time as the Patton forces arrived. When they did, then we were freed up and were able to get back to our base.
Did you see any of the concentration camps?
No, I didn't.
Did you find many Jews in your unit?
Oh, yes.
Jewish people.
Yeah, there were Jewish boys. It was a difficult thing for Jewish boys, after all. They came from families where families were pacifistic. Where the paramount in the minds of our parents was education, because they were denied it as European immigrants, and I think the thrust was for the most part toward that kind of endeavor. Some of the Jewish boys found it very hard to accept the discipline of army life, some of the rigors, and maybe having come from the kind of background that I did, I was a little more comfortable. I had, for the most part, live with Christians. This was not an unusual experience for me, and it might have been a lot easier for me than it was for others.
And what did you do after your discharge?
Well, actually, I went back to school. I finished my education at the University of Michigan, and then returned to Pittsburgh. Went to work.
And what type of work was that?
I joined a firm that was involved in building products, distribution of building products. People were glad to have young talent, if you want to call it that, with formal education in a business where that was a little unusual. Also, it was unusual to find people with a Jewish background in the business. There were very few of us in the late 40s and early 50s, actually involved in dealing with commercial construction, institutional construction. And just a handful of us, really, when we went to a meeting of the trade associations and so on. That's quite different today. There were not that many Jewish architects. There were not that many Jewish contractors. So it was a little unusual, but in the business I entered as a salesman in 49. Officer in the corporation, and now in the corporation. Still enjoy going to work every day after 40 something.
When did you and how did you meet your wife?
Obviously, you observe pretty girls at wherever, and I was dating a sorority sister, and One day, a good friend who was dating a non-Jewish girl said to me, "Ed, are you doing anything over Labor Day weekend?" And I said, "Have any particular plans?" He said, "Well, I think I hope to marry my sweetheart. My parents will be relaxed in Atlantic City and resting for the weekend." He was a Philadelphia boy. And he said, "How about coming up and giving me a little moral support?" As I explained to him, and I took him out of this non-Jew. I did, and checked into this hotel, and one evening, in into the lobby, walked this very attractive gal who he knew and I knew very slightly, with a great tan, and we decided that this certainly, I had given him all the moral support I needed, and now I had to enjoy myself, and persuaded her to join me. Her parents had sent for a night on the town in Atlantic City, and that was the beginning of the romance. Needless to say, young pretty girls in two-piece bathing suits on the beach in Atlantic City aren't that hard to take. That's how it all started.
And what year was that?
That was 1947. Returned to Pittsburgh and we dated. I was unsure about a career, and I took the position with People Hoffman Corporation in 1949, around Thanksgiving time, and I said, you know, if this thing works out, we'll be married within a year. Actually, Thanksgiving, as you know, falls on the fourth week of November. Our actual anniversary date was November 19th. So I came within a week of being a liar, but I did. We were married in November 19th, 1950, so I kept my promise.
Tell me about your children.
We have three children. A daughter who will be 40 next week. And twin sons who are 36. All three children reside in the Washington, D.C. area, Potomac, Maryland. Quite interestingly, the three children are all married, all have children of their own. There are five grandchildren now, and one due in the next couple of weeks. We have a lot of lawyers among those people. So there are three children, three in-laws. In that group, actually, our son-in-law is a lawyer. My twin sons are lawyers, and one of the twins is even married a lawyer. So out of six people, we have four lawyers. Interesting about Washington, D.C. practices, though, the kind of law that we practice in Pittsburgh isn't the kind of law that's practiced in Washington, D.C. Jim is with the Federal Reserve Board legal section. Gary is with a small law firm that does special governmental work dealing with the federal government representing local municipal governments. Daughter-in-law is with a very large law firm that deals with Food and Drug Administration problems. And our son-in-law, who's the eldest, is with a very large corporate law firm that deals in international trade problems. The two other young ladies who haven't been yet mentioned, our daughter Laura, who's in the speech field and for many years was a director of the speech clinic, and then I'm now at a private shingle, and now I have a very extensive speech practice with therapists working under her direction. Daughter-in-law Joan is a nurse, who's an administrative nurse at Fairfax Hospital.
In addition to your occupation, it is well known that you were in city government. You want to tell us about that?
The strange coincidence of having lived on the north side and gone to school on the north side as a child, and then winding up with a business on the north side made me unique, as I dealt with the typical do-gooder, Chamber of Commerce type activities, and I guess I had a particular interest desire that was beyond normal practice of business people, and so I got myself very much emotionally involved in those kinds of activities. Also, I felt there is a need to bridge the gap between the typical Jewish community and the non-Jewish community. While I've been active always in the Jewish community, I also felt comfortable in the non-Jewish community. And I felt as an act of service, it's good practice to maintain those kind of relationships. This was a good opportunity to do this. I had been a sponsor and founder of an organization that originally dealt with the problems of the East Street Highway expansion program, which caused a tremendous amount of dislocation and heartache for people on the north side. I also was involved in the United Way agency dealing with the problems in the Manchester community primarily. In fact, was president of those two organizations. During the term of my presidency of something known as Neighborhood Centers Association, the Johnson Anti-Poverty Program came into being. This brought a lot of federal funds for the first time into handling the problems of trying to do something about the problem of poverty. And so I very much involved in Head Start programs, if you remember, and economic development, upgrading of housing, and that kind of thing. And that was really my interest. And from it, an opportunity presented itself where there was a change in the guard, so to speak, in city government. And a man by the name of Harry Kramer, who was seeking to replace Joseph Barr, the mayor, with Barr's support, was running for the mayor's vacancy, mayoral vacancy. He felt that there was a need for some new people and people who came from different backgrounds. You know, it's been a practice in our city government. The members of council may, in fact, hold other jobs and may continue in whatever their private work is, provided they obviously attended their responsibilities on the city council. So the city council in those days was made up of people who either came from a legal background, a business background, a union background, or perhaps were government bureaucrats. And there also was a practice at that time to maintain some balance on the part of the Democratic organization. So there would be known as the Polish seat, or the Italian seat, or in fact the Jewish seat. So at that time there was some identification of what was known as a Jewish seat. So the organization sought me out because of my involvement in community activities and asked me if, in fact, I would run for the post. And at that time, when you ran citywide for an at-large election. I ran in the primary, won the primary election. Before the September general election took place, there was a vacancy on the city council. And I was, at that time, council had the right to appoint until the general election to fill the vacancy. I was then appointed to fill the vacancy, ran for the general election in November, and was seated for a 4-year term of office.
What year?
The election was in 69. I was actually served from January of 70 until 74.
Ed, who were some of your co-council members?
There was Tom Fagan, who was an official in the local Teamsters Union. There was Jack Lynch, a stockbroker. George Shields, an attorney. Dick Calgiri, who you know later became mayor. Lewis Mason, who became the president of council. Walter Kamick. Irma DiAscenzo.
Ed, did you initiate any bills during your tenure?
The work of the council is primarily a check and balance on the administration. Primarily what I dealt with were the financial problems of the city, developing the budget, where the money was to come from, establishing the taxes structure, what we were going to collect in real estate taxes. Also, there were certain significant activities that needed the approval of city council that were of considerable concern to me. One was the early action transportation program that had been presented and could have been a forerunner to our light rail transit system we have today. As you know,
was defeated by people who felt differently than I did. There was the placing of the convention center in the city rather than in the suburbs. There was the financing of the Three Rivers Stadium. These were the significant projects that I got involved in. And something also that was of concern to me was the establishment of the juvenile facility, the Schuman Center, within the city, because unfortunately many of the children who need that service are city children.
During your term, what accomplishments were there in the Renaissance of Pittsburgh, and how were you involved?
My term of office was at the same period of time that Pete Flaherty was the mayor. During that period of time, the Renaissance came to a halt. Pete was not part of the Renaissance movement and felt that somehow or other there were influential people involved, and this was not to the betterment of the city. If you recall, Pete said, "I am nobody's boy," and being nobody's boy meant that the establishment people kind of gave him a wide berth. So there was a moratorium on Renaissance during his term of office. What our job at the council was to hopefully try to maintain some of those ties in any way we could, at least see the projects that were underway got successfully completed. Also, there was a great deal of concern about the development of the medical center, feeling that this was non-tax producing properties. The administration fought the expansion. We, on the other hand, recognized that this was important for the community as we were losing our place as a steel center, and certainly provided a lot of employment for not only for professionals but for sub-professionals as well.
In view of the fact that you had a business, personal, civic life, how did you manage it all? And which, if any, suffered?
In retrospect, I don't know how I managed it all. Probably my business wasn't as well managed as it ought to have been. I tried to remain a good family man, a devoted husband and father, and carried out this political life. The political life was a great experience, I think, particularly for our children. I think they enjoyed it. The fact that I have two sons in Washington, D.C., that kind of keep their hands in the political picture. And it was a living experience in what you might have called civics in that day or political science today.
Okay. Let's go back a little bit, Ed. What was your mother's maiden name?
My mother's maiden name actually was Vishnevetsky, but typical of people getting off the boat in Ellis Island, Vishnik, as you know, is the Russian word for wine, so her name became Weiner.
What was your father's first name?
Lewis.
And what type of business?
Incidentally, Michaels was originally Michalitsky.
What business did your father start, and what was the name of it?
Well, my father had a small general store on Troy Hill, a small community in the north side of Pittsburgh, and operated the business for over 50 years.
And the name of your business today?
Hinkle Hoffman.